Frederick Fennell and the Cleveland Symphonic Winds played Vaughn Williams.
This is WHFR Dearborn, broadcasting out of Henry Ford Community College, and thank you for tuning in. Hope you're enjoying this beautiful classical programming. If you enjoy beautiful music, we certainly encourage you to participate in the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra. You can be involved by having a seat at the next concert. It's Friday, February the 1st. Rich Ridenour, pianist and conductor, is back by popular demand, and it's a show you won't want to miss. For details or more information or tickets, simply call the Dearborn Symphony office, 313-565-2424. And Monday nights, 11 p.m., WHFR Radio invites you to listen to something a little bit different. You won't find it on other stations, and it's a shame, because we are presenting every Monday evening at 11 p.m. old-time radio mysteries. Yes, it's suspense, the inner sanctum, the weird circle, so much more. Mondays, 11 p.m.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College.
Good morning, this is WHFR Dearborn, and you're listening to the show called Physically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and as the name of the show implies, we will be speaking about all things metaphysical during the next hour, and my special in-studio guest today is Mr. Robert Thibodeau. He is the owner and operator of the Mayflower Bookshop. He is also a spiritual astrologer, psychic reader, speaker, spiritual researcher, and musician, singer, songwriter. He's a very busy guy. And with all that being said, I would just like to say good morning, Robert. Thank you for being on the show, and how are you today?
I'm doing good. How do you?
I'm good. I'm real good. The first thing I would like to know is, I know you're really well known around the Detroit area as far as metaphysics is concerned. Would you consider yourself a metaphysical icon at this point in this area?
Somebody from you, there was a class at U of M called me, and they said they wanted to interview me as part of their program, that I was, you know, that I was some kind of icon, and that the lady wanted to know how many followers I had.
Oh, really? You have a cult, do
so,
you?
Yeah, that's just implying that or something, you know. So I said, after, like, I talked another 5 minutes, and I said, when you talk like that, you think I have any followers? You know, I said, no, I don't, you know. So I don't think I'm an icon as much as J.P. McCarthy in the old days on another WJR, a big station around the United States, actually. And he said something like, you know, do you think, how do people see? So I know you predict things, you've predicted things that show with political things and the weather and sport to amazement, but how do people see you? Do you think of yourself weird? And it's kind of a sad question. And I thought, you know, like, gosh, you know, met John Lennon, he convinced me to be vegetarian.
Really?
Later I found out that you could feed 8 times more people. I'm a vegetarian, an organic gunner. I play acoustic instruments. I plug in, some guys play electro. Deliver babies at home, you know, I thought I was normal. Everybody else was weird.
Right. Just how you look at it, right?
It's all relative. You know, to me, I love the earth. You know, I'm a guy who thinks that the day that the corporations or the governments or the leaders loving the earth, all religions, if they're loving the earth as a primary, that God is in everything living, the Christos of the ancient Greeks, the Christ, the Krishna of Hindu, it weaves and lives and breathes through all that live, the light, like Celts thought, it was in that reflected in the earth and the of our dreams. I think I'm normal, actually. I think the world's becoming numb, and some people become artists, and other people sunk deep into matter a little too far. And I'm kind of a guy who thinks that you can think with your heart, that the heart is capable of informing who's telling the truth and who's lying and who's a real person. And everyone is. There are no reptilians. There are no no aliens here among us. Everybody's a human being. And some are kind of buried. And other people are embodied while they're in front of us, almost half dead. Shakespeare said, die before you die. And a lot of people are kind of disembodied already. So the question directly, I think I'm just a human being. And I think being a human being, that every day I'm going to rediscover who I am.
Mm-hmm. Is that hard to do?
Now, you have an emptiness practice, the Dalai Lama teaches. Not if you can say, like, the Christian not I, but the Christ within me. Not if you are a person who loves trying to understand and listen to the song of the birds in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Would you say you respect all living things?
I love, respect, and a great student attitude about learning, life learning a living thing. In the Bible, they say, love all God's creatures. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting for, you know, the wars we have. They give you the report, like, a 50 trees died, 5 squirrels died, accidental, off. You know, they don't give you the kind of stats, animals and stuff. And humans, obviously, primary importance. Our younger brothers and sisters, the trees, and birds, and the plants, and the earth itself is living through water. In American Indians, all these names for water. Water was much more alive. A water, you could live on it, you know, strongly for days, you know. Mm-hmm. And now the water's dead and the air is dying, you know. Water and air and food quality is leaving because the spirit of the world is drinking. So, you know, I'm a guy who thinks that each human being is composed of spirit and mind, soul, psyche, and body. And our spirit is touched with everything that happens on earth. Each one of us is affected by everything good and bad that happens on earth. And each one of us has a body that can separate us off from everything so we can be alone with ourselves or individualize, think for ourselves. Freedom from the unified field theory. Freedom from God, even. Freedom from ourself being stupid or ignorant. We can look within ourselves and discover a freedom, a loving, kind relationship with the world around us.
Mm-hmm. So you feel that you refer to the fact trees and other, I guess, things of nature are our brothers and sisters, so everything is related, whether it's human or animal or mineral or whatever it might be.
Right. There's obviously a hierarchy in a way, and there's a differentiation of harmonies that you can't have all the musical instruments in an orchestra collide. They find their place. So, yeah, I think everything's important. I think everything's living, everything's important, and that there's some kind of divinity underneath everything. Like, divination isn't just me. It's not about fortune telling. It's fun to predict the Super Bowl or a presidential election, the mayoral election. It's fun. But what's much more fun is to divine the divine in another person.
Mm-hmm.
Lovers do it. Musicians do it. I'm not sure if the weatherman and stockbroker do it. Sometimes,
yes, I'm sure. Once in a while, anyway. Now, how did you get your start in metaphysics?
I think I was brought up very Christian, and I believe that Jesus was a friend of mine, you know, and that God was a friend of mine. And I had kind of an intimate connection with a feeling that there were angels and there were spiritual beings, and when you died, you didn't die, and there were saints and sages. And I got kind of lucky and got beat up and robbed and hit over the head with a gun when mm-hmm. I was I think 19 or something, and kind of saw an angel standing next to me by myself on the ground unconscious, and then saw that I was like this being of with a dim yellow golden rosy light in my heart, and I was kind of this blue and watery thing. I don't know what that means, but it shook me up bad to be out of your body and still alive. I went on a really mad search for knowledge, and I was going to Wayne State University at the time, and I discovered Yogananda, Swami Yogananda, yogis in India. And one thing led to another. I met the Dalai Lama. I met, you know, old priests and rabbis and Native American Indian people. I went on a mad search to try to find knowledge that could awaken my potentials and help me to help others, you know. I saw how many people were being swindled by other people, taken advantage of, you know, whether you know, some woman that you know who got cheated out of her body, or somebody who was getting somebody too drunk, somebody who was selling people bad drugs or drugs of law. And you know, I was kind of shocked by that whole scene coming out of the 60s and the 70s where people weren't hippies anymore. They were falling into drug and other people were falling into that money somehow I was going to save them. And I was on my own mad search to find out what could happen. And I think I discovered a book called The Secret Doctrine by Matt Blavatsky. Mm-hmm. I saw it sitting on a shelf in Ann Arbor. And I went to the guy and I said, do you see that book glowing? And he said, oh, my God. He said, hey, Ron, there's another guy out here. A secret doctrine is glowing. And I said, what, the secret doctrine? What is it? And so I ended up buying this book. And he said that one person a week was saying it was glowing. So I live a life. There's a lot of psychic phenomena take place around me all the time, or intuitive, you know, spiritual things that glow or something. And then later I met Einstein of his life off, and I met Einstein's daughter, and she said that it was open and heavily underlined on the desk. And then I found out that Luther King read it a lot because Gandhi read it, and Gandhi was reading it off his life. And I found out that Dane Ruger and these early astrologer guys in America were reading it. And then I found out Manly Hall was reading it, and he was giving talks to football fields of 33rd degree medicines and stuff in California. And so I started to realize this is a heavy book, man. And this is a book where that influenced like political guys and spiritual guys. And Dr. Hart, who was a doctor in the Olympics, was reading for new ideas, healing people. So I started reading that, which led me to Ralph Steiner's books, who started Waldorf Education, Biodynamic Gardening, and studying purification of water through vortex energy, and led me to even the vortex engine. You know, I mean, vortexes are a vacuum. How the heart is a vacuum. It led me on to all kinds of scientific, spiritual scientific research. So I've spent a life. The bookstore, Mayflower Bookshop, is a great bookstore, no doubt.
It is.
But the reason I'm doing it is so I can study, you know, mm-hmm. and get paid to study, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people try to get, an honorarium or some kind of money so they can go to school for free. And so I thought, like, well, if I could just keep these books and study them and read them, you know, and sell a few to pay the bills, that I could just keep studying. So it's been a lifelong learning thing for me. And I'm still, you know, my attitude is that when the world's at peace and everybody's co-creative, participant with each other and friendly, we can all sing songs and tell stories, I'll stop learning for a while.
Mm-hmm. Just for a little while?
Yeah, until you have to go to another star system or something, you know.
Right.
Captain Kirk over to another place, you know.
That's right. You never know.
See if there's any trouble over there you can help out with. And the Dharma, you know, ranger, you know.
Right. That could be you.
It's a nice idea. You know? I've always, as a little kid, you know, I always fantasized the heroes, you know, whether they were the cowboy or the Indian or a war hero. And then it went into the superheroes and the comic book heroes and Sherlock Holmes. And the fairy tales were really big. I've often lectured on interpreting fairy tales as poetic journeys of individualization, like in Jungian psychology terms, but more than that, as some kind of a way of awakening our super psychic powers. I mean, we have more abilities than meet the eye.
Mm-hmm. I just want to quickly remind everybody that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is the program called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and my special guest on this particular edition of Metaphysically Speaking is Robert Thibodeau. He is owner and operator of the Mayflower Bookshop, spiritual astrologer, psychic reader, speaker, spiritual researcher, and musician, singer, songwriter. Now, you mentioned earlier that you started the Mayflower Bookstore in order to keep studying. Is that the basic reason that you keep on going on and contributing more and more to, I guess, the metaphysical society in this area? You just keep learning and want to apply that to life in general?
You know how, like, when people are madly in love with someone and they just keep sending them roses and poems and, you know, I think it's like that, except that I fell in love with the world. I fell in love with every person I see, even the enemy. You know, you have to love. Jesus and Buddha said you had to love your enemies. You don't have to like them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I kind of love everything and everybody. And so I'm on kind of a romantic quest, you know, very much like the Holy Grail quest, mm-hmm. that you're trying to find something that could nourish us, awe, the Holy Grail, something that could heal and nourish us, awe, and help the king and the land to be one rather than the king is destroying the land, King George is running around destroying the land, in trying to profiteer or, you know, conquer something without conquering themselves. You know, Aristotle conquered the world, the known world at the time, and he's not Aristotle, Alexander the Great. Aristotle conquered it maybe in thinking.
Right.
But Alexander the Great conquered the world and stood on a big mountain, you know, that whole story, and said, I've conquered the world, but I haven't conquered myself. So it's always an interesting thing. It's very humbling when you get angry and jealous and feel attachment or insecurity or I'm not good enough. And, you know, and the opposite of that is you're not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always humbling to see yourself fall into that, and it's also humbling to not be able to see the divine in another person. The Tibetan Buddhists have an interesting idea that one of the poorest things about modern society is that we've lost the ability to see the pure land. And the pure land is the gold that's in you, you know, the gold in your own heart and mind.
Mm-hmm.
What was the question? Did I answer it?
Yes. Well, let us move on. But I wanted to find out, too. Now, you think that you truly and honestly love everybody?
Yeah. That doesn't mean you like them, you know. You love your enemies is what Jesus said. And Buddha,
right.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you can divine the divine, if you could see the 150,000 lifetimes you're going to go through, if you could see the last 3 to 5 to 7 and the next 3 to 5 to 7, see, I think I can do that. I can see people where they're going, and that's why it's easy to predict people a lot of times. If you can predict where they're going 3 lifetimes from now, it gets pretty easy to predict where they're going next week.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, you know, even AA, you know, has this idea that if you, I think it's their idea, if you do the same things you've done yesterday, you end up in the same place. And so what I've specialized in is seeing, like, the little child in every person, you know, and seeing the full-grown spiritual possibility. And then seeing the struggle of the mind-soul, seeing the struggle of the personality between the ideal and the reality around us. And
mm-hmm.
And so that gives you compassion for people, you know. The Tibetans have another interesting... I like the Tibetan Buddhists. They're pretty clear. And Tibetan Buddhism, by the way, for those of you who don't know, isn't really Tibetan Buddhism. It's all the wisdom of ancient India, ancient Greece, ancient Egypt, monachism into the 3rd century. Om Mani Padme Hum, they're number one from Chinese Buddhist to Tibetan Buddhist to India. Om Mani Padme Hum, may all beings find happiness, may all beings be healthy, you know, that kind of stuff. Om Mani Padme Hum is one of their mantras or little sayings. And Mani from monachism. And so Tibetan Buddhism is this kind of, then it's this shaman guy, you know, like, you know, the shamanic Tibetan meeting the wisdom of ancient India and ancient Egypt and Greece and monachism. And there's a lot of great, Plato, that means Plato too. And if you read Plato's, Proclus's commentaries on the Timaeus by Plato, Thomas Taylor translation, you'd clearly see that the Tibetan Buddhists and Aristotle, a student of Plato, most of modern history, Western history, is kind of like elaboration of Aristotle. And you would see that Tibetan Buddhism is that, is,
mm-hmm.
is a really interesting virtue mind training based on these ancient teachings of spirituality. And just like people want money, if you have brains, my dear brothers and sisters, if you have virtue, charisma, magnetism, then that's greater than money. People want money, they want the chick, they want the car, but the vehicle of thinking, the vehicle, you know, education is the most important thing that's not happening, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't educating us toward making up good songs and gardens and, you know, children, we're not really educated to how to find vitality in food, you know. I mean, Whole Foods is a phenomena, Whole Foods or Plum Market or these health food stores, right? They're actually a phenomena of modern America that speaks to the fact that millions and millions of people think there's something to this food thing. They're experiencing it directly. They're not able to, you know, you don't have scientific proof that this kiss is good,
mm-hmm.
but you know it's good or bad. So, you know, John Lennon was the guy who turned me onto it. He said, if you just eat brown rice, he turned me onto macrobiotics, by the way. Later I met the guy who turned him on,
mm-hmm.
Who wrote a book called Sugar Blues. Sugar, according to macrobiotics, is like the subtle form of suicide.
Really?
Yeah. If you read Aristotle's Metaphysics book, Metaphysics is whatever takes you through the experience. What is it in us that goes through the experience, not that gets stuck in it? And that's a song in our heart, and it has intelligence. But go back to John Lennon. He told me if I eat brown rice for 10 days, and then my mouth wouldn't lie to me, and whatever I eat, my mouth would tell me if it's good or not. So I did that, you know? And then I was starving to have some meat, and so I got a steak. And when I took the first bite of the steak, I thought it was all blood and gristle tasting. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had a bad steak, and everyone else thought it was the greatest steak they ever had, you know? And so I thought, oh, my God, that's what he said would happen. It would taste like blood and gristle, you know? And so I never ate meat again, you know? And
mm-hmm.
And if you don't eat sugar and then you eat sugar, it's sickening sweet. But see, our taste buds lie to us. Mm-hmm. And when growth hormones were put into the cows simultaneously in the time of history, a little bit ago, you know, when they put the growth hormones in cows, generically altered cows that can't eat food and they eat chemicals and they can't eat grass and they're sick all the time and they're given, you know, all kinds of estrogen and antibiotics and stuff, that's when obesity started to be a problem. So if you're listening, I mean, I'm telling you could become metaphysical and spiritual by just eating grains and vegetables and miso soup and getting into like a, you know, self-healing cookbook or something by Kristen Turner. And learning about diet. But another way you can change your thinking to change your biochemistry too, and there's a lot of metaphysical research on that guy with the water where they freeze the water, and according to your feelings and thinkings, you know, what the bleep is happening. That's another movie that kind of talked a little bit about that. But the Mayflower is all these books on scientific evaluation of how thinking and feelings can change the patterns in the water in your system, and mostly we're composed of water. And you know, there's stats on how anger can give you heart attacks and affect your, you know, arteriosclerosis and all that kind of stuff from Harvard University. So there is science that kind of contributes to a metaphysical understanding of the world. And like I said, Aristotle had a book on metaphysics, and metaphysics was not psychic phenomena. Metaphysics was what got you through the earthly experience. You got to make it through the world if you can, Van Morrison says in one of his songs.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many lifetimes do you think people live?
These days, we're living about 7 in one lifetime. We're packing it in. But on the other hand, to answer that question more directly, and mind you, I mean, like, you know, whenever you're interviewed with stuff like this, if we had time, it's all fascinating. You know, I think the Tibetans are probably right. We have 150,000 lifetimes before you start to really get free and liberated, you know. But here's the other secret. The early Christians and the early Hermetic guys and the Celts and the Tibetan Buddhists, their thing is one lifetime. You know, that you can get enlightenment this life if you know what you're doing. And that's the goal, is to get enlightened this life. We're not going to reincarnate with any memory of this life. I mean, there's a good reason why we don't remember our previous lives. We've digested the experience like we do food.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember your past lifetimes, it could be an aberration. It could be like a sign of mental health mm-hmm. problem. Because just like you digest food, if you don't digest it, it will lead to blockage and a health problem. If you don't digest your experience from this life, let alone last life, you know, I mean, we're trying to create out of nothingness. The real genius can be totally selfless and see if you can hold your mind still. I mean, just to kind of shift again, allow me to jump again because we only have so much time. If the beginning of meditation and the beginning of spirituality is that you can hold your mind still with total stillness and total awareness, or you can hold to one thought, either no thought or one thought, for at least 5 minutes. That's the beginning of true spirituality. Those of you who are listening, take a look at what I'm saying. Try keeping one thought or no thought for 5 minutes without a second thought coming in or a first thought coming in. It's near impossible for the average person. Meditation is learning to hold the mind still. It's a problem with all science. It's all relative. Mm-hmm. In music, once you set a tone, there's an octave. And we could argue whether there's 7 notes between or 12 or whatever. But there's an octave. But you've got to have that first tone, and it's all relative. So the problem with science is everything's moving. You know, they have these like electron microscopes and all this kind of stuff, and they're trying to see something really, really small, you know, and it keeps moving. It moves, and you can and they're affecting it by their thoughts and their feelings and the warmth and the light and the breath and everything. You know, everybody's affecting everybody else. We don't know it. We're all in bed with each other.
Is that what it is?
Well, I know a lot of people are in bed with the corporate takeover of the world. I mean, I know that.
Right, right.
But I don't mind that the corporations take over and that the religions don't love the land and that a lot of them are paid off to tell you that gambling's cool and everything. But I think that it's not cool. I think that we don't love the earth. And when the religions, the first religion to find out that Christ is in the earth before they can't. I mean, I saw this preacher on TV last year from Tennessee, and he was complaining that unless we had Christ in the rivers were all dying, he said, you know, and that the miners have all come in and they mined everything and they gave us jobs and now they're gone and everybody's broke and all the kids are sick and we can't drink the water, we can't grow any food here. Well, duh. And he's going, and he's saying, you know, I think it's about time we start realizing that Christ is in the earth. Duh. if Christ isn't in the earth, it's not in your body. If you don't love the earth, you're not going to love your body. And if you don't love your body, you're not going to love the earth. And nobody's been loving nobody these days, because crime is intense.
Mm-hmm.
I was noticing that around the nation, crime's going down, but in Detroit, it's going up. That's it.
Yeah, that's not a good thing, and we get that reputation, and that's not good.
But I think meditation and spirituality and yoga, you know, the yoga of the union with the higher self, or the union with virtue. Plato, I was reading the other day a book called The Poetics of Politics by Aristotle, and he was saying that the Democrats think that everything's based on equality and equal rights, and that the oligarchs, I know these words are really strange.
Yeah, I don't know which one that is, but...
The Republicans.
Okay. Those guys.
Yeah. But he was saying the oligarchs or something, and he said they think that it's based on, you know, the kings or the feudal lords or the leaders and the very wealthy, and that the very wealthy are going to make the world a better place. And he says, but if you're asking me, the state should invest itself in those who are more virtuous, that in virtue, and those who inculcate virtue into their lives. Virtue, to alleviate suffering for ourselves and others, and to try to be able to see the beauty, the good, the true, and the beautiful. That was Plato thought was the experience of God. It was the experience of God directly. It wasn't an ideal to see the good, the true, and the beautiful in each person. Then we can fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people, before they send people to war, they should help a mother have a birth. They should attend a birth, especially of their own, you know, kid or something. And you could help a mom for like a month or three afterwards to take care of that child and the mom. And then you can go to war, you know, because each one of us was a beautiful little baby that wouldn't have made it without a mother. And the Mother Earth is a mother too. And the human being could be an experiment on this planet to see if love and truth could awaken us. And the truth is not the fact of like, where were you last night? The truth is, who are you? And where did you come from? And where are you going? And the human being, metaphysically speaking, is our bodies are created from the earth, and our intelligence is a gift of the planets and the stars, the weavings and rhythms of the moon and the sun and the seasons. It's a music that is an intelligent music that has descended from above. And the human being is the possibility of freedom, love, and truth awakening in the heart as an experiment and gift of the Mother Earth and Father Sky. The Native American Indians would put it that simply, but we could talk about the 12 signs of zodiac and 12 nerve plexuses and the Arthurian stream that comes in from above and the feminine Parsifal stream of the Grail that comes from below, or that comes up from, you know, in women it's more powerful, so it internalizes those sexual organs, whereas the men, the above going down power, externalization of the will is a little stronger, and it externalizes. See, I didn't mention any body parts. Are you proud of me?
Not yet, yeah,
yeah,
right.
You have to buy my CD to get that song Sex for Breakfast or whatever it is. I have a new CD, you know. I didn't tell you that.
No, but I got a couple of your other ones.
Yeah,
so
good.
And I just wanted to remind everybody that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is the program called Metaphysically Speaking. My name is Mike Holloway. And my special guest this month is Robert Thibodeau. He is the owner-operator of the Mayflower Bookshop. He's also a spiritual astrologer, psychic reader, speaker, spiritual researcher, and musician, singer, songwriter. Now, how did you get interested in astrology?
Somebody read my astrology chart a long time ago, and they made a bunch. They told me a lot of things about myself that nobody knew, and I thought it was a setup. Mm-hmm. I thought that a buddy of mine had set me up. Then she made predictions about the future that started to come true, like meeting a woman that you know I got involved with, and a job change, and a bunch of things. And I was at the time going on the radio talking about Krishnamurti and yoga and vegetarianism, and I thought, I'm in the wrong business, man. I should get into astrology, because if you can predict things, then people listen more, you know? If you can predict about the love life and their money and their health and what's going on in relationships. And then I can talk about yoga and macrobiotics and the Om Cafe and stuff like that.
Right. Get their attention first and then go from there.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's right, but that's what I did. That's what got me involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something you mentioned too. You are involved with the Om Cafe. I know you're really interested in what people eat. You've mentioned it before. Is that something you think that really fuels people?
Before Whole Foods was here and all these health food stores, I mean, I was on the radio talking about vegetarianism and yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you see that you can not only hear yourself, but you can reach top performance, both, you know, I mean, just as simple as miso soup and the right use of sea salt. When Gandhi wanted to free India from the attempt of slavery by the British, first thing he did was made their own sea salt from the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw it in the movie, Gandhi, but they didn't explain it to you, that sea salt helps you to think clearer, you know. They don't tell you things like in modern education that Ben Franklin and Tom Jefferson thought that brown rice should be the food for Americans. They don't really hear much anymore about, like, 10 years ago when the United States government and Harvard Med School suggested that we don't eat meat and dairy, and that we eat grains and vegetables and fruit, and how the cow industry spent $25 million. This is metaphysical, by the way. They spent $25 million on a lobby to keep meat on as number four. I think lately, in the last few years, Bush has changed all this again. You know, at least I'm happy. I mean, it's not what Jesus thought it was more important what came out of your mouth than what you put in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I want to say that, too. I mean, I'm pushing for being a vegetarian. You know, if you've never tried it for 28 days, wait to see how good you feel. Or if you've never tried going on wheatgrass and things like that, you know, it's an experiment. See, we're not free is what my point is. If you're really free, if I'm free, I can eat meat or not eat meat. If you're free, you can stop eating meat. If you're free, you can stop drinking alcohol. If you're free, you don't have to take medications, and you could be healthy. So I'm suggesting that you should follow your doctor's advice, of course, but you could try to find doctors that could help you to educate yourself on a diet that might support. There was one time where Harvard Med School said that diet not only can prevent disease, it can cure disease. A lot of doctors, you know, doctors are, as I understand it, they die younger than any other profession. They don't eat good. They don't get the training on diet. Their nutrition training is with the corporate food chain. But you can learn a lot about that by checking into Eden's Foods. They're the largest buyer of organic farming food. They're in Clinton, Michigan, outside of Ann Arbor. You can check their website. They have a lot of nice information. A friend of mine, Michael Potter, owns that place, and he gives talks himself. And you can check out Self-Healing Cookbook, How to Change Moods with Food. I'm convinced you can, if you can control the diet of another person, you're probably going to stay friends the rest of your life. I mean, it depends how much you want to love. You know, it depends if you want to be a lover and a romantic guy, if you want to be smart. Ben Franklin thought that if you eat brown rice every day, that you would have a clear head.
That was his philosophy?
Yeah, it's amazing, mm-hmm. You know. And I can't remember now if it was Thomas Jefferson or Ben Franklin that snuck brown rice into America from the Middle East under penalty of death if he was caught taking it out. And he snuck it in his pants.
Really?
You know, yeah, in his crotch area, you know. So I'm not sure what it did to all the brown rice, you know, that we grow here now, you know, as a forefather.
Yeah.
Ben Franklin's forefather of our country, you know, in
That's
a lot
right.
of ways. So, but grains are the only food that can pull you in to fill you up.
Mm-hmm.
And metaphysically speaking, though, we're talking about if you eat food that grows in the ground, you're going to feel grounded. If you have quartz crystals around you, you're going to feel grounded. If you also... Food that grows in the ground without chemicals transforms minerals in the ground into plant proteins and captures the sun. The earth can capture the sun and transform it. The earth mother transforms the sun. Because when we eat food, really, we're eating vibrations. We're eating mm-hmm. like the solar, kind of a solar energy, an invisible etheric vital chi energy. Etheric vital chi energy. We're eating energy. That's why when you measure what goes in and what comes out, it's almost the same, right? It's incremental because there's a cosmic nutrition stream as well as an earthly nutrition stream. And to find out about that, you almost have to read a book called Man or Matter by Koenig or look at Rudolf Steiner's books on nutrition. Rudolf Steiner, who invented biodynamic gardening. They make biodynamic wines now. A lot of biodynamic farmers are the number one consultants for the organic food industry and the wine industry in California and France even now in South America. Knowledge, you know, Tim Leary he shopped at the bookstore and he said that knowledge was the ultimate aphrodisiac.
Really?
I argued with him about this drug thing, you know, like drugs are an artificial metaphysics. Drugs
right.
are a false mysticism. It might give you a glimpse, but it's really hard to hold. But if you meditate in yoga, all the great saints and sages fasted once a week, once a month.
Mm-hmm.
We in America think that instead of fasting and doing less when we're sick, like the animals, we think we should do more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Ted Nugent. I mean, I've talked to him in the past and even been on a radio show with him a couple times. And if you're going to hunt your own food and do it like wild game like him, you know, God bless you. But otherwise, you know, to raise animals to kill and slaughter that are full of chemicals, it's not food. Somebody lied to you.
What is it? If it's not food, is it just...
A bowel movement.
A bowel movement. Okay, well, that's important too, though,
Well, I think
it?
A lot of us are blocking each other up. We're blocking ourselves up and numbing out. And food is entertainment for the most part. If you can control what you put in your mouth or your senses. I mean, noise pollution is probably worse than food pollution, but these are big issues. And I was making a joke earlier during a little break or something. I think it was during the break that I was going to try to package silence next year and sell silence.
Yes.
Because silence, when you meditate, it's listening to the silence. And whatever thought or feeling comes up, you try to get back into listening. And we're losing our ability to listen, you know. If thine eye be single, thy whole body is filled with light. And metaphysically speaking, there's a third eye or single eye that we all know about above the forehead that can give you psychic perception and forevision.
Mm-hmm.
There's a third ear. There's a single ear, and it's in the heart. The heart, I've discovered in my spiritual scientific researches that the heart is a musical instrument and a psychic learning device, and you can learn by heart by breathing the perception into your heart. Whatever you see, good or bad, right or wrong, I've helped hundreds and hundreds of kids get A's in school by teaching them that when the student talks, when the teacher talks, or the advanced student, or when, I like to think of myself as an advanced student, or when you're reading a book, you know, listening to the teacher, you breathe the perception in to your heart. You empty the content of your thinking and your feelings. The feelings don't come from the heart. They come from the warmth of the blood and the metabolic. We're head, heart, and sex hand people. We're thinking, feeling, willing people. We're physical, rooted in the sex center, emotional in the heart, and mental, sense-bound thinking in the head. And from a soul level, it's thinking, feeling, willing going down. On the physical level, we want to grow up as physical, emotional, mental. The soul, but when you listen with your ear, there's a heart behind the heart. And it will tune you into the reincarnating ego and the mind stream continuum. This is what I teach.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little CD I have called Heart Meditation that I make available to people interested in this, on how to meditate and how to awaken this higher proclivity. You start meditating for real, man, you're going to start getting A's in school.
Or that's whatever, a fact,
or a
four
point. It's Robert's fact.
Okay. Well, then it must be true. Right?
Robert's rules.
Oh, okay.
I think when he says it's true, you know, I mean, I'm saying that it's potentially true for everyone, you know, when it's true means, remember, my definition of truth is who are you really?
Right.
And each of us secretly suspects there's more.
Or hopes there are more.
I think there is more. Mm-hmm. I think that there is something in our mind that wants to come to know all things, and there's some part of our heart that's genuine that wants to love all things and wants to come to be loved. And there's some part of us that wishes, that's why everybody thinks they want to be a star or discovered, is that they think, I have some kind of talent that has been discovered. And I'm saying, yeah, you do. And I think it doesn't take much to look around the world. We don't really have like the statesmen like we have the early founding fathers, you know, who were all transcendentalists and people like Emerson and Thoreau. And yeah, we can find faults in all these people. You know, we can say that Thomas Jefferson had a love affair with a slave and he was one of the first people to eliminate white and black people. Because once that mixed marriage, I mean, we're all turning brown, right?
Right.
According to Harvard Med School, according to Secret Doctrine I mentioned by Blavatsky, she predicted after the year 2000, everybody's turning brown, copper tone color of the original peoples of North America before the Native American people.
Mm-hmm.
So, history's whoever remembers best, and boy, Blavatsky's Isis Unveiled and Secret Doctrine are really good. That's why Einstein read it, Gandhi, King, you know, that's why Manly Hall read it, most of the great metaphysical students read it. That's why I read it, you know, and I'm on to Rudolf Steiner, and I'm on to the Tibetan Buddhists, I'm on to the macrobiotics. I'll read anything. I studied the Kabbalah, the Jewish Kabbalah, you know. And before Madonna got into it.
Really? And, so you were ahead of the trend, were you?
or way behind. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I'm just trying to have fun, you know, and feel good the next day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how can we celebrate life all the time while we have... my friend Matthew Fox said that the saddest words... He was a priest in the Catholic Church. And I think he's now either with the Anglicans or Episcopalians or something. And he said the saddest words in the Bible is that they asked Jesus, what do you liken this generation to? And he said, I liken it to children in the marketplace who call to their elders and say, "We piped to you, but you didn't dance. We lamented, and you didn't mourn." And I think I take this that we, that Jesus was trying to say this allegorical thing, you know, that the modern age is full of children, not adults. Nobody wants to grow up. Nobody can hold still. The sign of an adult is that you can hold still and you can get work done. And you can love all the little ones and protect them. And we're like children in the marketplace. The corporations are taking over, and it's always, if you don't make something to sell, it's not scientific. You're not going to get any funding for science, right? Unless it's a weapon or it sells something. This is wrong. Ever since World War II, the corporations have taken over the universities. Now, again, I don't mind if they do that as long as they love the earth, but they're looking for profit. And Abraham Lincoln warned us about voluntary economic servitude, voluntary economic slavery. Mm-hmm. He warned us against the bankers and corporations stealing in our sleep, stealing from us in our sleep. That's what Ben Franklin said. So we want to, when you go to the garden, my brothers and sisters, you take the best, you leave the rest. So when I go to all these books, I'm not selling you Buddhism or Christianity. I'll sell you the book. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that we should go to all the greatest teachings and take the best and try to apply it in our life and see if it works. To be free enough, to be brave enough, to love the idiot. That does not mean you have to go to bed with him or her.
Right. It sounds simple, but it's sometimes hard to do, isn't it?
If you can't hold your mind still, it is not possible. If you cannot meditate, it is not possible. And meditation, you can wait like me and have a near-death experience. Mm-hmm. Come out of your body and go, "Holy cow! How did that happen?" Or you can lose somebody you love a whole lot. You can lose an arm or a leg in war. Mm-hmm. You can have a near-death experience, or you lose what you've identified with. The consciousness has it over-identified with form. We have a wrong marriage. It's not the hermetic marriage. It's not the spiritual marriage of heaven and earth that William Blake talked about. Who talks to you like this? That's what I tell people. Who talks to you like this? Does your neighbor talk like I talk? You know, and there's more of us. We're people who love the earth. And I don't know. I meet people all the time. They're different. They have different rap, you know. But you meet, sometimes they're artists, and sometimes they're musicians, and sometimes they're Christians, and sometimes they're Islamic, and sometimes they're Jews and Hindus and Tibetan Buddhists. And I myself, due to my own conditioning, kind of favor this kind of mixture of esoteric Christianity and metaphysics and astrology and yoga and Tibetan Buddhism and macrobiotics and vegetarian. I love this stuff. And I love playing acoustical instruments. You know, when you play an acoustical instrument, whether it's a piano or a violin or a guitar, you know, it resonates your whole body. You know, you put it, if you've never had it done, have somebody who plays guitar, put a guitar, they can get behind you and put a guitar against your body, against your heart. Because originally the guitar was played around the heart, but now it's more played around the stomach. But either one, and you strum that guitar with good chords and notes, and the whole guitar resonates your body. It's a healing. When you can do mantras, "Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum," you know, "May all beings be happy, may all beings be happy." I forget if it was Tennyson or Emerson or Thoreau. One of those guys would say their name as a mantra, you know, and they just go Thibodeau, 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 you know, Mayflower, Mayflower. But you say one thing again and again, something that's Om is the simplest word in India for the word God. Mm-hmm. And Om is like a trinity, like Father, Son, Holy Mother, you know, Father, Mind, Holy Mother, original trinity. And if you have one word, then you drop that and listen to the silence. Or you tell your mind to show you everything it knows. The mind works in duality. If you tell it to be still, it won't be still. But if you say, "Show me everything you know, you're so smart," it shuts up. Mm-hmm. You can tell the mind to think of space, because the mind is time. The intellect in the head fears death. Desire begins in the thinking, not in the pants. The nuns were wrong.
Yeah.
You knew this. You didn't. So thinking, you have to think about it. You can't get aroused unless you think about it first. So thinking begins. Desire begins in the thinking, and fear is the opposite of desire. They're like, you know, when you have a fear, you have a secret desire. When you have a desire, you have secret fear. You know, unconscious. So when you tell your mind to show you everything it knows, or you think of space, because the mind is associated with time, and you think of space, only the heart can understand space. If you have an enemy that's real close to you, he'll be very far away. If you have somebody that you love, even though they're 1,000 miles away, they'll be very close. Only the heart can understand space. The new frontier, inner space, not outer space.
That's right. That's a very deep frontier too, isn't it?
Metaphysically speaking.
Yes.
And it is. And so when you think of space, see, or you tell your mind to show you everything it knows, the thinking, sense-bound thinking will start to stop, it'll slow up. Then you experience kind of like a listening inside, and anything comes up, you kind of, one school of thought is that you say, okay, that's a thought, that's a desire, that's a fear, I should go do this, you know, you don't listen. But I think go direct. Just think of space, tell your mind to show you everything it knows. If you get afraid while you're meditating because you've never met yourself yet, remember how much you love and want to be loved. And love dispels all fear. Where there is love, there is no fear. These are very simple, simple rules of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of rules of the road, have you heard Tom Petty's CD, Highway Companion?
No, I haven't heard that.
This is one of the best CDs to come out. You know, I heard he's going to do the Super Bowl. I'm not sure. I heard that. Somebody told me that. But there aren't many people that play live music anymore. I think he might be one of them, you know.
Right. It's all recorded now, especially in a venue like that where it's really a large crowd and big event.
Bruce Springsteen, the Stones, and Petty and Neil Young, they pretty much, unless you go to the Ark in Ann Arbor, those are pretty much the only guys that play live besides the locals.
Mm-hmm. And very quickly, I just want to remind everybody that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is the program called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and my special guest today is Robert Thibodeau, who is the owner and operator of the Mayflower Bookshop, spiritual astrologer, psychic reader, speaker, spiritual researcher, and musician, singer, songwriter. Now, how would you describe the Mayflower Bookshop?
Probably most of our listeners have a website kind of internet connection, you know. You can go to http://web.mac.com/Mayflower Bookshop. There it is. Or go to Rudolf Steiner Archives and look for the Mayflower blog, and there'll be a website. And we have a website, and you can visit a virtual kind of little tour of it. But I think of the Mayflower as just a collection of, like, vegetarian incense.
Mm-hmm.
From around the world, rather than using animal fats, you know, when you're burning your incense, you know. So we have vegetarian incense, and we have, like, crystals and gemstones and talismanic, you know, sacred jewelry that, like, for the rich and poor alike, actually, you know, like things that make you kind of magical. We have a lot of books on fairy tales and children's books, you know, that inspire children. And is that what you mean? Like, what kind of books? Everything I've been talking about, like yoga, meditation, theosophy, Rosicrucians, Masonic, a little bit of conspiracy stuff, but I hate the conspiracy stuff. I think that when it comes to conspiratorial, either you're wrong and you're going in circles and you're wasting everyone's time, especially your own, or you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And since you're alive, you must be wrong.
Right, because you're still alive.
So I believe that the ultimate conspiracy is that the human heart has not fully flowered with intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate conspiracy is that human beings are meant to love and be free, and we're not supposed to be enslaved with addictions and external sense-bound stimulus. And that human beings have a possibility of being co-creative with not only your own life, but the future destiny of the earth. Socrates, Plato's teacher, said, why would you come to know these things? Why would you come to know the mysteries of initiation and spirituality?
Mm-hmm.
And Socrates said, why to awaken a more fuller participation with all of life? I say, Robert Thibodeau says, that it's also to awaken not only a more fuller participation with all of life, but to awaken a co-creativity with your own future and the future of the earth. And this is the theme that is in Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, unlike the puberty rites of Harry Potter, where Harry Potter's kind of like, you know, you're getting away from your parents. You're checking out a high school thing. You get a little taste of danger. They try to protect you. The Lord of the Rings and Star Wars are more of an adult fiction, metaphysical reality, that the earth is in trouble, and that the Dark Invader, and that the Ring of Power has to be gotten rid of, the Ring of Egotism and greed and selfishness, and this because we don't have the proper emptiness of the virgin womb of the heart to birth the hero or a god. Because we don't have this, we have the false emptiness where everyone feels empty and they need to fill it with something. and that they're afraid to be alone, and they leave lights on. I know people, I played music with one guy, and there's like two TV sets on, three radios throughout the house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going, we're going to play music. Can you turn that stuff off? He goes, why? I go, why do you have to turn on different stations even? He says, well, you know, a guy doesn't want to be alone.
So he has to have noise and congestion around him in order to, I guess, get by in life?
Feel the emptiness. Mm-hmm. That's why we eat and eat and eat dumb food that doesn't nourish us. You're like, when you know how you, when you eat nuts, you keep eating nuts, right? Here's an experiment for you, boys and girls out there in the listening audience. Go get some nuts, you know. Go get like a little of those little cups, you know. And and what I'm saying is soak your nuts overnight. Soak your nuts overnight. Soak those nuts,
okay.
Like cashews and almonds and pistachios, whatever you got. Soak the nuts overnight.
Soak them in water?
Or grapefruit juice.
Okay.
And then after you soak them, dump the water out and chew the nuts really well. A little tiny, those little bathroom cups, those little tiny plastic. Mm-hmm. One little tiny cup will completely fill you. You'll be stuffed. You won't want to eat for a couple hours because you'll digest 96% of the nut then. But if you don't soak the nuts, you only digest 3% of the nuts. And that's why you're eating, you're stuffed, and you're still hungry.
Right.
Size me up, little junior.
That's right. Got to keep it coming. Keep it coming.
Yeah, like those size me up. You know, movies and stuff, you know, that everybody keeps putting food in, you know, and they're stuffed, you know, but it's not assimilating into their bloodstream.
Right. Just a lot of empty calories.
And for you students out there, try learning about miso soup, unpasteurized miso soup. Go to the health food store and get some miso, and you can mix it with, you know, boil a little bit of seaweed or just have the miso. I turned on Billy Gibbons, ZZ Top, you know, and Willie Nelson, a bunch of musician guys, you know. Some of them I wasn't so successful with. ZZ Top I was successful with, but the Grateful Dead guy, Bob Weir. And but see, when on the road, these guys don't eat good, but all you do is get a cup of hot water and put miso in it, and then you drink that down, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get, you know, more digestive enzymes and acidophilus, and you get, somebody told me, more protein than sirloin steak. And seaweed and miso together get rid of environmental toxins and low-level radioactivity, according to Harvard Med School, I think. In a Food and Healing book by Coben, they talk about that. And so food can be very interesting. But miso soup sharpens your thinking. The right use of sea salt, which we talked about earlier.
Weren't you suggesting earlier, though, that people give, I guess, a vegetarian diet a 28-day test run to see how it works for them?
You'd want to give it a little time to see what happens, because if you're to the degree that you eat really well, toxins will immediately leave. Like when you stop smoking cigarettes, the craving for tobacco is the tobacco leaving the blood. If you're in a big hurry, man, go to this place called Creative Health Institute, where they do living foods and wheatgrass juice in Coldwater, Michigan. Or you can go to Ann Wigmore's Creative Health Institute. Not sure if that's the name of it or what the name of it is, in Boston. And there's also macrobiotic centers. We can go to Macrobiotic Center in Boston, Misha Kushi Institute. Let somebody else just take care of you for a week or two. Otherwise, the Self-Healing Cookbook is a very good book, and the book Food and Healing by Coben. Go to Om Cafe in Ferndale and try to eat some good food. See how you feel. I think if you eat a balanced meal of grains and beans and vegetables and miso, if you support it with spirulina for chlorophyll and protein from a freshwater seaweed, you'd be getting such a great nutrition that you probably wouldn't feel hungry. But if you've been eating a lot of dead food, you're going to start losing weight and things are going to empty first, and there'll be kind of a cleansing period. And so that's why it's useful to take 28 days, or maybe just start with fasting once a week, or introducing the right foods. My first spiritual teacher thought that you should, in creating the new, the old is destroyed, and that we should think more about what to do than what not to do. And so a lot of my spiritual teachers, they thought that you don't have to go to extremes, because if you go to extremes, then you might bounce back on an extreme. Like a lot of people who dive 100% into something will later quit it all and go back. In light of what I just said, then you would just start introducing good foods one by one. Keep eating whatever you're eating, but do the right thing. Like when people smoke cigarettes, you could go to, a lot of musicians smoke cigarettes that I know, and they have chemical-free cigarettes, like going to, I didn't mean to start giving plugs for, a lot of people smoke American Spirit cigarettes, or they go to the tobacco store and they get chemical-free cigarettes. I think even Winston has chemical-free cigarettes. And so then you take it inch by inch, you know, that there's the war that's going on is the war of our animal appetites eating us up.
Mm-hmm.
The animal inside is eating us up, and we've lost contact with what Plato calls the rational mind, but what I would call the spiritual virtue mind stream continuum.
So you just feel that most people are perhaps stagnant, that they're not willing to experiment at all?
Well, some people like Paris Hilton and Britney Spears are experimenting too much.
Mm-hmm.
They're people whose sun sign is being afflicted right now by Pluto and the last degrees of Sagittarius going to Capricorn. All these like Hollywood movie stars, these goddesses that some of them have died and been jailed, they all seem to have being hit by this Pluto aspect right now. Well, those people are experimenting too much. So I'm saying experiment with yoga, vegetarianism, meditation. Do it all, man. Check it all out. And don't let anyone get you.
Mm-hmm.
My first spiritual teacher thought that you should not let any one religion get you, that you should love the earth, and you should try to take the best from all the religions and put it together. That's the American way. America isn't the melting pot of all the races. It's the graveyard of all the religions and races. America fought American Revolutionary War to be free of religious authority and pirates of tyranny and kings and queens and feudal lords. And I think the new corporations should take a very good look at themselves to see if they're not new feudal lords of kind of a communistic thing without realizing it. And there's a lot of people I know who work for corporations, and some of them are very honorable corporations, you know. Some of these people are really amazing what they do with computers and software and technology and gifts that make our life easier. On the other hand, all the latest scientific gifts also come with their shadow. There's a couple of interesting books on diseases that come along with new technologies. And, you know, so I'm coming here today not to get lost in all this. It's very interesting to talk like this, but my main message today is to say that each of us has a gift inside that's golden, and you'll never know what it is unless you can make the mind be still, and you can learn to meditate and to give your body a break from its bad habits. And whatever the worst bad habit is, it might be time to, like a stupid, ignorant magician would make an animal sacrifice for the desire that they have. But I'm suggesting that you sacrifice the animal appetite of eating sugar, drugs, or whatever you're doing. Sacrifice that animal appetite on the altar of your heart,
mm-hmm.
so that you can awaken the fire of genius, the fire of inspiration, the fire of love, the fire of seeing the truth and something beautiful in other people, so that you can joyously and wake up in the morning and go out every day as if it's going to be a beautiful mystical experience, like you're madly in love. We should all be madly in love. We all should experience love and truth, because it makes you brave to be yourself, you know. It makes you brave to sacrifice yourself to make it a better world. Like when you have children and you really love, you do anything. You jump out in front of a car to save your child, you know. Mm-hmm. And the child of the future is at stake, my friends. So right. May we all experience love and joy and the causes of love and joy and happiness. May we all find true happiness by learning to be ourselves and rising to our higher inspirations.
And on that note, is there anything else that you would like to let our listeners know, perhaps anything that's coming up, how to reach you, anything like that?
I'm at Mayflower Bookshop in Berkeley, and I'm having a talk at Ohm Cafe January 20th at noon on predictions for the 2008 to 2012 and all the stuff about the end of the Mayan calendar and what's coming and making some presidential predictions here. So good luck, my friends, and we'll meet again down the road, as my good musical friend Doogie McLean says, you know, from Scotland. We'll see you next turn.
Yes, well, thank you very much. It's been very interesting. I appreciate the fact you're able to do this show. So thank you very much, Robert, and yes, hopefully we'll see you again sometime.
Thank you.
Hello, and welcome back to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station that is making waves. And due to the length of this month's edition of Metaphysically Speaking, I just want to briefly thank everybody that was involved with this month's edition of the show. First of all, I would like to thank my guest, Robert Thibodeau, who is the owner and operator of the Mayflower Bookshop, along with being a spiritual astrologer, psychic reader, speaker, spiritual researcher, and musician, singer, songwriter. I would also like to thank my producer, Kristen Risbeck, who did a really great job this month. Thank you, Kristen. I appreciate your efforts. And just real quickly to remind everybody that the next edition of Metaphysically Speaking will be coming on February 16th of 2008, so be sure to come back and check us out at that time. And as I have often done on this show, I want to end it by reciting this Irish blessing, and this is how it goes. May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face. The rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the hollow of his hand. And with that, I just want to say thank you for listening and have a great day.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, bringing you non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College. Good morning. My name is Bill Keith. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and it's great to be here with Light from the Underground, heard on Saturdays from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. We've got some great things lined up for you on this edition, and I'll tell you more about that in just a little bit. I thought we'd get things started with some music from Bill Maloney. This is probably my favorite of his solo albums, and it's from the album Dear Life. And this song is called After All This Dust Settles Down. You're listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM. We're making waves.